It is nothing less than tragic to have to go from a moment so beautiful to a subject so painful. But in fact, it is appropriate because it reminds us when we sing about shelter and the sukkah and the way we protect one another of the sanctity of what we have and how careful we must be and how fragile our shelters are. And there are times, rare enough, when it is virtually impossible to disregard the one text that I seek to avoid in giving sermons on Shabbat morning. That text is the newspaper. I don't actually think that the newspaper is the appropriate text for a religious institution. The Torah is. But sometimes things happen which forbid us to ignore them. And as you all know, such a thing happened this week. And not only was my text guided by the newspaper, but this morning I could practically give my sermon by reading a column from this morning's LA Times. For those of you who don't know the columnist Tim Rutten, I suggest you make his acquaintance. He writes on books with great erudition, literacy, and elegance, and he comments on politics, even when I disagree with him, with great integrity and insight. And this morning, as I was sitting at the breakfast table and looking at the LA Times, regarding media, his column began as follows. It is entitled, "A Pulpit of Shame for Iran Leader." Here's the first paragraph. One of the world's truly dangerous men, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, left New York a clear winner this week, and he can thank the arrogance of the American Academy and most of the U.S. news media's studied indifference for his victory. He goes on, in an equally eloquent and appropriate tone, to remind us that the president of Iran's appearance at Columbia University is particularly ironic and sad, given the history of the institution. Because in the 1930s, its once famous president, Nicholas Butler Murray, was a German sympathizer. And before World War II, Columbia matched or exceeded its current infamy in its president's warmth and welcome to German fascists and Nazi leaders. The reason I bring this up is because it is worth reflecting, not politically but religiously, on what happened this week. And there are some things that we should remember, particularly during Sukkot, because, of course, Sukkot was occasioned by the triumph of good over a tyrant. That's why we have this holiday. And the first distinction that we have to make is one that is uncomfortable. In writing about Iago, Shakespeare's villain in Othello, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the great poet and critic, coined a wonderful phrase. He said, Iago's was motiveless malignancy. In other words, he was just rotten. No ascription of motive or purpose was sufficient to explain him. And in the religious world, unlike in the political world or the sociological world, but in the religious world, the category of evil exists. And there are people who are evil, and their evil is not sufficiently explained by their ideology or their upbringing or their experience. It has an almost metaphysical quality. They are just evil. I remind you that this is somebody, a man, quoting Rutan again, who hopes to see Israel wiped off the face of the earth, who has denied the Holocaust, and is defying the world community in pursuit of nuclear weapons. As the French philosopher Alan Finkielkraut noted, the two great prohibitions after World War II were no more Auschwitz and no more Hiroshima, no more destruction of the Jewish people and no more nuclear weapons, and both of them are simultaneously being defied by this man. The distinction that we have to make when we talk about inviting him to speak at a major American university is that this has nothing to do with free speech. Free speech is preventing someone from speaking. It's not choosing not to issue an invitation. Once Columbia had issued the invitation, they were stuck. But why they issued it in the first place is frankly beyond me. Because there is no possible outcome, none, that would not bolster his credibility at home and would not make him seem like either a hero or a victim, and both of them are equally bad in the eyes of the world. For the president of Colombia to get up before his invited guest spoke and lambaste him, which he did, and talk about how terrible he was, just made him rude as well as foolish. And as Eric Hoffer once very perceptively noted, rudeness is the weak man's imitation of strength. Bollinger looked weak and he looked rude. He had already looked foolish. And what ought our reaction to be? In part, you know, whenever something like this happens, there is a temptation, it's a powerful one, and sometimes correct, to just keep quiet. Silence, as Chesterton wrote, is the unbearable repartee. There's nothing to answer to silence. And sometimes when you make a noise, all you do is call attention to something that would otherwise pass unnoticed. But this was already a huge public outcry. And not only was he invited to speak at Columbia University, but also in every major media outlet that the United States has to offer to people who are supposed to be of eminence. But there is a lesson, and it is an important one, and it is not a political one. I don't know any better than anyone else what we ought to do about the threat of a nuclear Iran. If you're coming to the rabbi for geopolitical strategy, all I can say is you're turning to the wrong source. I read the same newspapers you do, and I have no more insight into it. But I do know this. In Kohelet, in the book that we read this morning, we learn the race is not always to the swift nor the battle to the strong. That's good religious advice, and it is certainly true. But as Damon Runyon, the American writer, once said, the race is not always swift nor the battle to the strong, but that's the way to bet. The chances are that the swift will win the race and the strong will prevail. And that means that to the extent that we can corral the world community and strengthen ourselves and point out that there is genuine evil in the world and call it by its name and not back down from confronting it and not be afraid to call attention to its depredations, and realize that, as Sukkot teaches us, that the veneer and the cover of civilization is extraordinarily fragile. To that extent, it is possible that we will survive and that we will prevail. But that means more than just shaking your head as you read the morning paper. It means making your voice heard, writing to congressmen and senators, letting the people who are the trustees, for example, of Columbia University know what you think of their decision, doing something that takes very little time and effort but collectively has a great weight, which is letting our voices be heard. Indifference is, after all, the great enemy of the good. And indifference means going about our lives without taking account of the fact that there is evil and there are threats and the sukkah is fragile. I suppose, actually, now that I think about it, this wasn't so inappropriate a topic for a morning like this. Because what we did this morning was lift our voices together and bless each other and promise peace. And the key is that we have to do that when we leave this sanctuary, again and again and again, because there is evil in the world. And because we do, to the extent that we are able, through our flawed and mistaken and partial view, we do seek to represent good. And we can actually tell the difference. So it is my hope that when something happens, as happened this week, and you know in your heart, as I hope you do, that what is happening is wrong, and you know that it will be used, as this undoubtedly will, to strengthen the forces of evil and destruction in the world. And you know that the weak-minded and benevolent intentions of some good people will be twisted to support the cruel and destructive agenda of those who are cleverer and understand the way the world works far better than the naive who issued this invitation in the first place. When you know that that is so, don't be silent. Don't assume that the world knows of your disapproval if you don't express it. Speak out. Write. Demonstrate. Let others know what it is that we believe and what it is that we represent. The sukkah and going into the sukkah is an almost unique mitzvah in the Jewish tradition because it is a mitzvah that involves all of you. You don't do it just with your hand or just with your words, but you stand in the sukkah in your entirety, and it is a beautiful metaphor for the way in which we must stand for goodness in this world. Not occasionally and not partially, but with all of ourselves, all of the time. Remember the advice of our centennial scholar, Elie Wiesel, when we said to him, "Do you have any final words for us?" And he said, "Yes, live higher and think deeper." That is morning, noon, and night. When you read the paper, when you see the news, when you speak to your neighbor, when you pray to God, on this Sukkot, when we appreciate how fragile, how frail, how easily washed away are the tides of goodness in the world, when we remember how recently the world was engulfed in a conflagration started by these kinds of people, let us remember that we are only powerless when we are silent. And we only cease to do God's work when we forget that God works in this world. And let us continue to pray once more for goodness, for blessing, and for peace.